I took out my notebook from my purse, and he began his story. Last year, a wind straight from the North Pole came sweeping down over Paris. It was a terrible time for those who didn't have a roof over their heads. People froze to death in the streets. Clochards were dying everywhere. I found an old woman on Boulevard de Sébastopol frozen as stiff as a board. There was a piece of paper in her fist. It was notice. She'd been evicted from her apartment in the dead of winter. I went down to the morgue, Henri continued after sipping his wine, to look for a friend of mine. It was filled with bodies of people who'd frozen to death in the street. I don't know what we would have done if it hadn't been for the Jesuit priest. I never knew his real name, but Abbé Pierre was his nom de guerre. He started to raise hell with the government, really stirring them up. The church was embarrassed by him, but all of us in the street saw him as a savior in the disguise of a penniless priest. He had some tents set up in front of Saint-Étienne-du-Mont. Deirdre and I went there to keep warm. One morning, I woke up to find Abbé Pierre standing over me. He was a little man with a long beard, wearing a long cassock and sandals like a Russian monk in the time of Dostoevsky. His dark brown eyes were looking right into my soul like he was Saint Francis of Assisi. I'd never had a soft spot for priests, but Pierre was different. He has supported the Russell-Einstein manifesto to call for nuclear disarmament. He fought with the French resistance in guerrilla attacks against the Germans. He helped Jews escape from the mass arrests of the Nazis in the raffle du Vélodrome d'Hiver roundup in 1942. Pierre was one of the leaders of the Maquis in the Chartreuse Mountains. He blew up bridges and helped an agent working for de Gaulle escape over the mountains to Switzerland. For his Maquisard exploits, he was awarded the Croix de Guerre and Médaille de la Résistance. But I think he got bored after the war. Pierre was the kind of man who had to have a noble cause in order to live. When the freezing weather hit Paris last year, he rose like an avenging angel with the sword of God. He was the only Catholic who knew how to get along with the communists. They respected him because he was a real proletarian. He'd jump into his beat-up Renault and roar around the city, raising money from everywhere, the left wing, the right wing, politicians and businessmen, the church and the existentialists, rich ladies and school children. Charlie Chaplin gave him a check for 2 million francs. Pierre even got money from the prostitutes. Abbé Pierre's movement was called the L'insurrection de la bonté, the uprising of kindness. He told the nation that if they didn't build housing for the poor, there would be a bloodbath, a revolution, just like the Commune, all over again. Henri paused, pouring another glass of red wine while I was catching up with my notes. I was so fascinated with the little flute player, I'd forgotten how badly the room smelled. I noticed long hairs curling from his nostrils. If I'd had my scissors, I'd have given him a trim. Henri nodded his head towards a table by the wall. That man over there with the eye patch? He's the Count of Uhlenburg. He lost his inheritance at the gaming tables and found himself sleeping in the street. He and Pierre got together a squad of men who dropped out of society to live on the streets. They'd been stockbrokers and engineers, attorneys and bricklayers, cooks and soldiers. They'd go out every day and collect copper pipe and motors and corrugated tin from all over Paris. With the money from the scrap, they built a shanty town made of trailers, buses and freight cars. The yard was bare dirt without a blade of grass. When it rained, it became a sea of mud, but the people who lived there loved Abbé Pierre. That shanty town was a lot better than sleeping in the streets. Père Flûte, I said. Please hold up for a minute. I'm writing about the shanty town. This is all so fascinating. I want to get this all down. Henri drank his wine while he waited for me to catch up. When I caught up, Henri went on again. One day, Pierre discovered a baby frozen to death. He went to the housing minister's office in a rage. The guards couldn't stop him. He blew right through the outer offices until he confronted the minister. "It's too late," he said. "Children are starving in the street while you eat your camembert." "Hooray for Pierre!" Yasmina cried. Henri bellowed with laughter. Mon Dieu, how that man had a gift for words! He once quoted a Chinese poet, "From behind the red palace door comes the smell of rotting meat, while peasants lie frozen in the street." Tears welled up in Henri's eyes, and wine dripped down his beard. He took out a scarlet handkerchief, wiped his mouth, and went on. "But you know how it is in France these days. The government is a revolving door. Since the war, we've had nearly 20 governments, and nothing has been accomplished. Deadlock, stagnation, that's what we've got. France needs a man to lead like Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The American president said, a society is judged by how it treats the least of its citizens. Now the leaves are on the trees and nobody thinks about the cold. But Paris is the cradle of revolution. Auguste Bazin said, we carry it in our breast. It walks with us. We sleep with it. It's always been that way in France. Nothing happens unless there's violence. La révolution. Et quand elle arrivera, je serai au rendez-vous, mon Dieu. I'll be playing my flute on the barricades. While I scribbled away, Henri fell silent, looking with sad eyes into his empty wine glass. Yasmina took his rough hand in hers and gave it a squeeze. If it gets too cold this winter, she said, you can come and stay with Mama and me. Peculiar odors assailed my nostrils, a pungent smell rising from under the table. I peered into her basket and Deirdre said, oh, that's for my kitties. After the restaurants close, I go around and fish out of the trash tasty morsels that my kitties would like. Well, Henri and I take what we need and they get the rest. How many kitties do you have? I asked. Deirdre's vacant blue eyes widened and she smiled proudly. I have 100 kitties. They live under the bridge. Henri finished his sandwich and carefully brushed the crumbs from his mustache and wiped drops of wine from his vest. It's a fine day, my darling, he said. Let's go down and catch some fish. Henri excused himself to go to the kitchen, where the patron kept his fishing pole, and I promised to send my completed manuscript as soon as I was finished. In the rear of the cafe, I observed Célestine sitting alone, her legs swaying from her chair, too short to reach the floor. Her bright eyes were fixed on Henri as he came out of the kitchen carrying his pole. Coming out of the dark cafe, I was dazzled by the bright light. I marveled at Yasmina, who seemed to know so many interesting people. I watched Deirdre and Henri go off towards the Seine, Deirdre a head taller than him, her hand entwined in his, limping along in her patent leather high-heeled shoes, her aigrette feathers fluttering in the wind. In the square before Notre Dame, I spotted Céline, the ice cream seller. "Let's have a crème glacée," I cried. Céline is like a block of rough-hewn granite, as wide as she's tall, legs as thick as the trunk of an oak tree. She's so short she stands on a box to reach the top of a cart. Dressed in a smock and apron, a straw hat and white plastic sandals, she sells ice cream in summer and hot chestnut in winter. "Qu'est-ce que vous voudrez, ma chérie?" she always says, lingering on the chérie to make it a little music with her Polish accent. Yasmina took chocolate and I chose raspberry. We strolled down to the Seine, licking our ice cream, listening to the music of Joseph, the blind accordionist who was always playing on the quay. I like his face. A somber face with razor-sharp cheekbones and vacant eyes set deep under his handsome brow. I don't think he eats enough, though. There's not much meat on those bones. He was playing a Polish mazurka. his slender fingers flying over the keys. "Listen," Yasmina cried, "des tambours!" Further down the river, a band of Africans were pounding on their drums. "Let's go listen to them play." I told her to go ahead. I'd wait here by the steps. "Come on," she cried, "they're really good. I just feel like being by myself." She walked away taking large strides, tossing her hair. She doesn't like it when I'm not feeling social. I looked down at the Seine and saw Père Flûte perched by the river with his fishing pole. Under the bridge, Deirdre was feeding her cats. Dozens of them had appeared out of nowhere. Black and white, brown and yellow, striped and spotted, fat and thin, running in circles around Deirdre's ankles, pouncing on the morsels of cheese and rancid meat that she'd fished out of the garbage cans. I went down the stairs and sat by the river, listening to the sounds of the accordion drifting down from above, a Hungarian rhapsody making me think of Janos. I pulled up my skirt and stretched out my bare legs to the warmth of the sun. Tugboats were cruising along the lazy green current of the Seine, pulling the barges down the sea. A little boy was riding his tricycle around and around in a circle on the barge, his long-eared spaniel chasing after him, white sheets and underwear hanging out to dry in the rigging overhead. He called out to me and I waved, watching him until he's disappeared under the bridge. Can you imagine Paris without the Seine? I was feeling proud of myself. I've defeated an evil man. If only young girls knew what they can do with their teeth. But as proud as I feel, I'm restless too, dissatisfied with my progress. I want to do something in life. I want to do it now. I don't want to wait until I'm 18. That will take forever, an eternity. It's a curse to be only 14. I dream of finding a dance partner. We could dance the tango before thousands of people. We'd go on tour like Joe and perform in foreign cities. New York, London, Amsterdam, Copenhagen, Buenos Aires, Rome, Berlin and Tokyo. The whole world is out there waiting for me. I want to learn the tango and the mambo. I want to invent a style of dance that is my very own. I want to go beyond the beyond. Huh. According to a disheveled parrot, my fate is l'amour et la mort. What does it mean? Everyone must die. What is death anyway? Mama is dead. Papa is out there somewhere. Is he alive or is he dead? And love? Boop. I never had a lover, except the Danish boy who kissed me on the beach. I closed my eyes and tried to imagine him, his blonde hair and blue eyes, his silky skin and soft lips. I raised my arm to my lips and kissed my salty skin, imagining it was the Danish boy I was kissing. Then I saw it wasn't the Danish boy. It was Gio. As the sun climbed higher over the spires of Notre Dame, I dreamed of Gio's kisses melting on my lips like raspberry ice cream until I fell asleep, listening to the current of the river and the music of the accordion, a Hungarian rhapsody with African drums.